Lots of Python projects are starting to use GitHub Actions for continuous integration and deployment, as well as other workflows. Tanya Allard, a senior cloud developer advocate at Microsoft, joins the show to answer some of my questions regarding setting up a Python project to use Actions.
Welcome to Test and Code. If you've found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics.
On Test and Code today, I'm thrilled to have Tanya Allard. Welcome to the show. And before we get started too much, could you tell the people in my audience who you are?
Yeah. First of all, thank you for having me and your podcast. And I'm Tanya Allard, like Brian has introduced me. I'm a senior developer advocate at Microsoft. I specialize in all things scientific computing, machine learning, and open source. And I love Python. I love tinkering with Python. And I love automation. And that's basically also one of the reasons why I've been very interested in supporting the community that are wanting to use GitHub Actions or are struggling with, for mainly the scientific computing community, which is like my side of Python I mostly interact with.
Oh, really? Is it a different sort of problems that scientific computing has than just like, say, your web developer person?
Well, mostly now the scientific computing folks encompass people that are doing any kind of modeling, simulation, using the scientific Python ecosystem, machine learning, data science. So because of the kind of work that we work on, workflows and the highly dependent workflows on data, some things operate a bit different. Libraries are different, and people tend to use different packages.
I know a lot of open source packages are migrating towards GitHub Actions. What are GitHub Actions anyway?
It can get also very confusing because there is GitHub Actions that is the actual product of GitHub. And it's basically a set of tools that allows you to do continuous integration and continuous delivery, and also a great load of workflow automation. So you can start doing some sort of automated labeling, check in your PRs. You can integrate with some webhooks, for example, to get notifications through things like Slack or send messages through Twilio or stuff of the such. So it's very, very versatile. And then within the way we work with GitHub Actions is to define a workflow, and it can be whatever you're wanting to do. For example, create your wheels and publish them on, or publish your package in PyPA and do your set of tests, for example, build your documentation and publish it wherever that you're publishing it. But also in the sense of or the area of scientific computing, machine learning, and it opens up a lot of possibilities as well. And then each individual, there's also a thing called actions, which are like individually composable steps or units of work. Let's say that you say you're working with Docker containers, you can have one action that will log you into Docker, build your image, and push it directly within your main workflow. I don't know if I made you feel more confused now.
The problem space is fairly broad. We're just doing work based on, it's work being done on a server based on some sort of trigger, whether it's a commit or a merge request or something else. And the interaction with GitHub Actions is a little different than I'm used to. Within GitHub Actions, you don't really have to interact with the interface that much. You mostly interact through workflow files. Are there other differences between other competing CI systems and actions that you know of?
If you're a maintainer for an open source project and you wanted to cover, for example, the three main platforms being Windows, macOS, and Linux, then you would have needed to have a combination of Travis, Abayer, or CircleCI to cover that. So GitHub Actions give you the ability to have just one single workflow and be able to test your code or package your code for those three platforms, which in like for me, it makes it much easier because I didn't have to keep track of different tools as well. And also the kind of triggers that you can have for your workflows is very, very diverse. You have the common ones that you've already mentioned, like pull requests or commits, but you can also have, because it's directly integrated with GitHub, it's part of GitHub, then whenever you create a tag, then you can also use that. You can have scheduled actions. Let's say that you want an action to run every Monday at 9 o'clock in the morning, because, I don't know, that's when you build your application and deploy, then you can do that as well. And that gives you a lot of flexibility. Also, if you need to do, for example, build your Docker images every so often, those cron actions are really, really good. You can create webhooks, which I don't think you can do with things like Travis, in the sense that if you need notifications or a report on your workflows or your CI or CD, you can get them sent to your email or Slack. And you can also start doing interesting things like chat ops through GitHub Actions, which you can do with any other tools either, because it doesn't have the direct integration with GitHub.
Okay. Having it packaged with GitHub is very, very convenient.
Yeah, definitely.
There's no doubt about it. It's very convenient. It wasn't obvious to me how to get it started. You have a .github directory with a workflow directory, and then you drop like some YAML file in there with some syntax, and that gets run. And I don't remember if you have to turn it on somewhere, or do you have a magic checklist for how to get started?
No, so basically it is that kind of magic that you create your .github file, your workflow directory, and then you dump your YAML file, and that creates a workflow. You don't have to initialize it or click button so that actions are enabled.
Okay. It just runs. If you have that there, GitHub will do it.
Yeah, exactly. GitHub will directly identify that you already have workflows and run them whenever your next trigger occurs. One of the nice things that now actions have, and they didn't used to have in the past, is that if you've never used actions, you don't have actions in your repository, you can go to the action tab. And it will try and identify the programming language that you're using. So in this case, if it's Python, it will add a very basic main.jaml or workflow.jaml file. So that will give you the starting point. And it will start with some things like install a specific version of Python and then try probably look for your test folder or do your test directory. And then you can build up from there. So that's also a nice add-on, and there are lots of starting configurations now. I think there are for Node.js. I don't use Node, but there is one for Node. There are for Docker stuff, Python, I don't know, like Rust, I think. It's very, very diverse.
So I've got a directory that I've got so far one file in it. A couple questions around that. Can I have more than one workflow then per project?
Yeah, definitely. I actually like separating my workflows depending on what they're doing. So if I have one, for example, that builds a Docker image, I have a file called docker.jaml. If there is one that is only for testing, I have a testing.jaml, then one for build and publishing. So you can have as many workflows as you have, because I also find that if you have everything in one main YAML file, it can end up being super, super long. Even if you're using things like tox or nox, it can get like quite long if you're doing a lot of different things.
Yeah. So also, I'm actually just had a, I've got a couple small projects, but somebody did a pull request to add a pre-commit workflow as a separate workflow to test things like linting and stuff. It's pretty cool to have that separate, because it is nice to be able to look at the dashboard and say, okay, well, all my tests and stuff are in one workflow, and that was fine, but the like the linting stuff failed. So it's a different panic level for me of like, oh, my system doesn't work anymore, versus it's not formatted right or something like that.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
Those actions get run on the merge request. I don't know if that's automatic or if I've set that up or not, but does it run all the workflows, and all the workflows have to pass before the merge, or is the merging and workflow not associated with each other at all?
I normally just wait until all of the workflows have passed to be able to merge. That also depends on your triggers, because if you have your triggers as pull requests, that's going to trigger your workflows. But if you don't have it, it doesn't. But you can also set it so that it's on merge rather than when the pull request is open. So you have like those two different variants. But I just normally wait for all the workflows. And you can also have fast fails, for example. If you're testing against different versions of Python, let's say they have 3.6, 3.7, 3.8, or as many versions as you want, and then it fails for one, then you can have a fail fast so that it doesn't continue the workflows for the other different versions as well.
Oh, that's great, because you know there's not much point. If your policy is that everything has to pass, then there's not really much point in testing everything else. And there's a good chance it's just going to fail on everything. Possibly. Yes, there's reasons why we test on multiple ones because of, you know, we're testing compatibility issues. But if there's an actual, like a something broken in the code, it's probably going to fail everywhere. Interesting. Have you done some of these sessions with helping people migrate?
Yeah, so I've been working with, well, actually, because of the tweet that I put up there, a few people have reached out. I'm working on those projects. I've migrated a lot of my own personal projects and projects that I regularly contribute to or maintain. And I've done this in the past as well. When people were also migrating to Azure pipelines, I was helping folks, for example, in the Jupyter world and Papermill. And I always find this very, very interesting. It's something that I quite enjoy. I don't know if I'm a weird person, but I really enjoy like this kind of problems.
So what kind of problems are different projects having the same problem, or are they all unique?
Some problems have shared problems. For example, there is not a very straightforward way to install and start Anaconda environments, just because GitHub Actions doesn't provide native Anaconda support. So there are a couple of actions that folks have created out in the community and are available in the marketplace. But I still have to find one that does things right every time or the way that I would expect it. So sometimes there are issues fiddling with Conda environments and versions. And also there have been some problems with, especially machine learning or scientific computing. Sometimes you need to compile things on the fly, or you have some certain memory limits. So those also have been interesting things to overcome. And I actually have been working with some people from Imperial College London, and they're doing something really, really interesting. They're doing all of their benchmarking for their software or for their code using GitHub Actions and virtual machines. So we've had to find a way to spin up certain virtual machines to do the benchmarking, extract the reports, and then decommission the VMs. That was actually very, very interesting. That was not straightforward at all. Like finding a good way to do this complex workflow was quite challenging.
Yeah, that sounds challenging. You did mention that you have used, that you've helped people do Azure pipelines in the past also. Are people migrating from Azure pipelines to GitHub Actions, or people staying, pretty much leaving those alone?
I've seen a few people that are still running on Azure pipelines, but also I think a lot of folks, because of the convenience of having your code and your CI and CD within GitHub all together, they're starting to migrate. And I think also Azure pipelines, because it is integrated within Azure DevOps, there is a lot of stuff. So if you just want to do the CI or testing or the CD part of things, it was very, very confusing. It was like quite overloaded if you wanted to do just that bit.
I forgot a question that I had right away, and I think I know the answer, but the name of your YAML file, does it matter?
No, not really. I think a lot of tutorials or a lot of the documentation that you're going to find out there is going to suggest you using main.yaml. But as I mentioned before, you can have different files and you can name them as pretty much as you wish. Yeah, depending on what, on the task or the workflow that they're doing.
Okay. And then once you have, if you've got like, say, two or three different files with different purposes and workflows, they can have different rules of when they run. And they also, when like, but if they all have the same role, they have the same triggers, you can go to their dashboard and you see all of them as separate tabs then, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So you can have each individual workflow with their own triggers, because probably there is some of those that you only need to run whenever you're making a release. There is some others, for example, your linting, if you're using things like Black, for example, and Flake 8, you want to run that ideally every time that you're pushing or something. So you can see the different triggers. It makes it very, very easy to identify when the workflows are running. Then you can see everything without pretty much leaving GitHub at all.
Having those different workflows are good. I was actually just talking to somebody yesterday about tests that you don't really need to run. And he was like, oh, okay, so I got like some weird code that's off in a corner that is just for, it's hard to run because it's for a different operating system than I'm normally using. So I don't run tests for that. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's exactly the reason why you need to write tests for that and have,
right,
and have your CI system run it, because if it breaks, you're never going to see it because you're not running that code.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think that being able to run on all operating systems, the main ones, you can, it is very, very easy now. For example, I don't use Windows. I develop either on Linux or in macOS. But you always want to test that it works for those of your users or collaborators that are using Windows.
You can even test on Mac with GitHub Actions, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Are there different flavors of Linux that I need to test for, or just picking one, is that sufficient usually?
I normally test on Ubuntu because that's what is available normally.
Okay.
And I think it's one of the mostly used distributions. I don't use anything else.
Okay.
Normally you would already have all of the required Linux packages installed beforehand, rather than you having to do apt-get, for example, if it's Debian-based or something, or APK,
okay,
if it's another distribution.
So I definitely want to run my tests on multiple operating systems. Do you recommend that I run like my linting? Do I need to run that on multiple operating systems, or is picking one sufficient?
Yeah, I think for linting, for example, you can just do one operating system. If you're doing, I think the folks from ConDaForge do a lot of different operating systems off, and they do leverage Windows, Mac, and user, Linux, Mac, and Windows, because they do have to build all of the packages. Well, they have to build all of the packages that are then published, ConDaForge, to be able to be installed through Conda.
That's cool. So they're using GitHub Actions?
They're using, I don't know if they've migrated. They were using Azure pipelines, but I can check now. But I think they are a very good example on workflows on ride for testing and building on multiple operating systems.
Call to action for people. Since a lot of people are migrating, if you're doing something cool within your pipeline, if you could throw comments in there, that would be awesome, because people are looking at GitHub projects to see how they're doing things.
Yeah. And also one of the nice things of GitHub Actions is that people can publish their own actions, which are the individual steps. So let's say that you always use Docker. Again, I use that a lot because it's one of the actions that I use most of the time. So if you're using Docker across your different projects or across your different workflows, instead of you having to rewrite the same bits in every workflow.jaml file, you can publish that action and then you can pull it. And you can, it's basically like doing a pip install package, but instead of doing pip install, you're doing, I use this certain action and this version. So you don't have to rewrite that part of your workflow.
Okay, neat. Is there a place for people to get started? Where do people go to just get started and learn the basics?
There is the GitHub Actions documentation. And there is also a GitHub repo called Awesome GitHub Actions. It's one of the awesome collections. Sarah Dresner and community have done an amazing job at collating different examples, tutorials, actions that are in the marketplace. But also, if you go to the GitHub marketplace and look for actions that do linting or continuous delivery or workflow automation, you could probably find those building blocks already done for you, or you could go to the repos and have an idea on what people are doing.
Okay.
Yep. So I think those are some good resources.
Well, anything, any other calls to action you want to have people do if they want to know more information?
I'm just going to open the same call to action that I've been opening for folks in scientific computing. If you need a hand, just reach out to me. I am more than happy to help you all. I'm not very good at web dev, so I will probably be less helpful there, but I can also help.
Okay.
Just try it.
Are you doing that as part of your role as a developer advocate?
It is part of my role. It's not something that I have to, that is like, this is one of the actions that you have to do as a developer advocate, but it's one of the things that I just want to do to give back to the community, help those open source maintainers that are struggling a tiny bit. Yeah, it's also something that I enjoy doing. So
okay.
It's a bit of everything.
I think that's wonderful. We get so much from open source projects. So giving back to that community is really cool. And then if people want to know more about you, how do they ask you? On Twitter, is that the best?
People can reach me out on Twitter. I am easily findable. And also, they can go to my website that is tralard.dev. And they can contact me from there.
Thanks so much for answering my questions about GitHub Act. I'm sure people will reach out to you. So thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Testing Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.